Tonight's study again is we're still in our walk study, and of course this is October the 29th, 2014, for the sake of the recording. And we're going to be in Joshua 22. And you say, well, see, why Joshua 22? You know, we've been through Joshua 18. We've looked back at Deuteronomy 13 and Deuteronomy 8. And, you know, on back to live, tying together, it seems like. And it's kind of uncanny the way they're doing that. And, it sometimes surprises me the way it works out. But, and going back and realizing that, some of the things that, God told these Israelites that when you get into your land, you know, you've got to walk before me in the prescribed way or there will be consequences. And the prescribed way was to leave behind all this idolatrous stuff that was in the world. And you know, when you get into the book of Joshua, where you find 4 B.C., you know, we're down to 1444, 14. Forty-three in time in our studies as we go through, and you know God had promised these folks the land of Canaan, and last week we talked about what these people got. They were sent into the land to map it out, not knowing even at that time what their lot would be, but they came back with actually, I guess what we would call a book, where they had mapped out these places, and these representatives from Israel had gone down there and gone in there and done that. When they came back to Shiloh, to Joshua, well, Joshua had, the high priest, as a chief priest, to draw the lots to each group according to God's will. And certainly Joshua couldn't do it. You know, he had to get the chief priest to do it. But certainly he was God's spokesman at that time, and so therefore under the orders or under the word from God through Joshua, then it was done. And so this brings us to chapter 22 of Joshua. There's only two or three places there that it talks about walking, but nevertheless, it carries on through as to what God had promised and what God had told us. Good that we go through this chapter, and then we'll get on over into Judges, because this is a continuing story, folks. It just goes on and on. And again, I'm kind of mesmerized by, you know, looking at a study of walk and stuff and picking out these things, it just seems to fall together. And that's wonderful. That's great. Everybody with me in Joshua chapter 22, it's on page 817 if you have a companion Bible. If you don't, I can't help you there, but we're going to look, I think, at the whole of the chapter. Yeah, chapter 22. We're going to look at the whole of it, and not so much in real tight detail, but you know, look at what was said and look at the correspondence there and go back and look at, you know, some of the other things that we've already covered and tie them together if we can that way. It says in 22:1 of the book of Joshua, then Joshua called the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half tribe of Manasseh. So he made a call to these two and a half tribes because they were the ones that were there, and they were the ones that was going to cross back over Jordan and have their possession on the other side of Jordan. And but they had been told by Moses, as Moses as being the man of God at that time, that do that, but bring their men of war over and help Israel fight the Canaanites that were in the land. And this battle went on for, best I can figure, about 8 years there. And then they had pitched the tabernacle, the roll-up church. They had pitched it in Shiloh and put up the walls and the curtains and all the things that it takes to do that. And because Shiloh is the name of tranquility and rest. And so they were, after these battles that were fought, and after these kings were slew, and all the things that went on at that time, which we haven't really covered, they were down to a point now to where they were beginning to get some rest. And so Joshua called these two and a half tribes out, and he called them for reason to address them. And he was going to give them their leeway to go back and to possess their land also. So he says, then Joshua called the Reubenites and the Gadites and the half tribe of Manasseh and said unto them, verse 2, I have kept all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you and have obeyed my voice and all that I commanded you. So he's saying here to these folks, that you have obeyed Moses and what Moses told you to do, and you have obeyed me, and you've obeyed my voice and all that I commanded you, because here Joshua is speaking for God just like Moses spoke for God. And with this in mind, you know, we've only got into the second verse here, but I'd like for you to hold your finger here and turn with me back to Deuteronomy 34 for a minute, because this is what that is mentioning. And let's go back to Deuteronomy 34 and look at verses 1 through 5. And that's on page 287. Again, if you have a CB. And because it makes a point of this in the notes there, that's in Joshua 22. So back to the 34th chapter of Deuteronomy, it says, and Moses went up from the plains of Moab unto the mountain of Nebo, and to the top of Pisgah, that is over against Jericho. And I think we remember from studies past, I certainly do, that this was where Moses got to see the promised land. He didn't get to go in it, but he got to see it. And so up on that mountaintop, he was privileged by God to get to see the land. And he says, and the Lord showed him all the land of Gilead unto Dan. So as far as he could see, and as far as the eye would carry him, God showed him or caused him to see the land that had been talked about and the land that they had wandered in for 40 years, that it was just that close. And it says in verse 2, and all Naphtali and the land of Ephraim and Manassas and all the land of Judah unto the utmost sea. So that was what they were looking at up on top of Mount Pisgah there. They could see, evidently see these things. And so I think it comforted Moses somewhat that certainly he had reached that point in the journey. And he says in verse 3, and the south and the plain of the valley of Jericho to the city of palm trees unto Zoar. And the Lord said unto him, this is the land which I swear unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob, saying, I will give it unto thy seed. I have caused thee to see it with thine eyes, but thou shalt not go over thither. So the Lord told Moses, you're looking at it with your eyes, but you're not going to get to go there. It's kind of like, in my sense, in my line of thought, it's kind of like being somewhere and seeing the appearing. You know, you can see it there, but it takes a change to get there. And so there wasn't a change in Moses' life here other than him giving up the ghost, to give it up what he had. It says in verse 5, so Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab, according to the words of the Lord. And he buried him in a valley in the land of Moab over against Beth Peor. But no man knoweth of his sepulcher unto this day. And Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eyes were not dim, nor his natural force abated. So you see, God does take care of his own. But there comes a time, and this befalls everyone, there comes a time when your work is finished. And here Moses' work was finished. And he was 120 years old when he died, and he was the youngest of his family to die. And so there were others of his own group that lived longer than that. But yet, his functions, his body and all was still in, seemingly still in shape to carry on. But having said all this, you know, the promises that came from God through Moses was still yet to be fulfilled, and it was to be fulfilled by Joshua. And that's what Joshua was talking about over there when we go back to Joshua 22, where it says, you kept all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded, and have obeyed my voice in all that I commanded you. And so, you know, this is, 8 years later? So, yeah. So they've done what they're supposed to do up to this point. And back in 22:3 of Joshua, it says this: "Ye have not left your brethren these many days until this day, but have kept the charge of the commandments of the Lord your God." So he says it ain't been all that long, you know, according to the time, especially to the time that they were in the wilderness and, you know, and getting to this point, 8 years of doing the fighting there to be able to get their land, I guess seemed like it wasn't that long a period of time. And Joshua certainly wanted to bring that point out. And he says in 4, "And now the Lord your God hath given rest unto your brethren, as he promised them. Therefore now return ye, and get you into your tents, and unto the land of your possession, which Moses the servant of the Lord gave you on the other side of Jordan." So you see, when these people got down there, they knew what the 2.5 tribes, they knew what their land was going to be already. But, you know, the others didn't know until they went in and spied out the land and had the battles and all this, you know, as to what their portion was certainly going to be. And he says, "But take diligent heed there." That's 39:66. The idea of greater attention, or that he's calling for attention above all else, or clear your mind of all these other things, or everything that might be on your mind, just clear your mind and take heed, because there's quite a bit being said here in verse 5. And we get a lot of ands in here again. You know, we've went through some of these before, and they're a little different here, but still it's basically talking about the same sort of thing. In verse 5 it says, "But take diligent heed to do the commandments and the law." The commandment here is singular, if you'll notice. "And the law which Moses, the servant of the Lord, charged you." Okay, to love the Lord your God. So the first one is to love, to honor God and give him his proper place in your life. You know, that hasn't changed down through the times. We need to honor him and give him the praise and the adulation that's his, because it's his. He is the provider. We don't get around that. I think those of us that are members of the body of Christ understand this more and more each and every day of our life, that he is the provider, and he provides all of these things for us. Not just some of it, but all of it. So it says there, to love the Lord your God and to walk. Here's the first end. And to walk in his ways and to keep his commandments. And this "and" here is, these "ands" are put in for great emphasis. And to cleave unto him and to serve him with all your heart and all your soul. So here we're talking about to love and then to have a walk. That walk there is a manner of life in all his ways. So he has laid out the direction and the way that we're supposed to go, and that's the way we're supposed to walk. We're supposed to be the point man of God for God. And so that's our manner of life. And to keep the commandments. to do what he has said, because his voice and what he says is just as important as anything else that he does. And to cleave, you know, if you're really fond of something, you're going to hold on to it as long as you can, or if your life depends on it, you're going to hold on to it as long as you can. And if he furnishes you all these things, you certainly need to cleave on to him. You need to hold on. Because, you know, for the children of Israel, the word talks over and over again about making it to the end. They're going to the end. That's holding on to the very end. And I think that's a thought that we need to refresh our mind about. And then it says to serve. And certainly to do that with entirety, both body and soul. Here it talks about nephesh there. And five, the soul, the nephesh. And so that really is our entirety, because in the overall picture, you know, this is what God requires of his man or his servant. Now, verse 6. Let's go to verse 6. And it says, so Joshua blessed them and sent them away, and they went unto their tents. So, as the spokesman of God, he said, okay, you finished your work here. You can go back home. You can go back across the river. They came and helped the rest of the tribes of Israel, and they certainly done everything that Moses had asked them to do. So we get to verse 7. Now to the one half of the tribe of Manasseh, Moses had given possessions in Bashan, but unto the other half, therefore, gave Joshua among their brethren on this side of Jordan westward. So half of them got to stay in the promised land, half the tribe, and the other tribe was across the river. Okay. And he spake unto them, saying, return with much riches. Now, when you go across Jordan, you're going to return with the spoils of war that you have taken during these 8 years. And it's a pretty good little laundry list here, if you will. Let's look at it. As he spake unto them, saying, return with much riches unto your tents, and with very much cattle, with silver, and with gold, and with brass, and with iron, and with very much raiment. You know, we read over there earlier, and they're coming out of the wilderness, that they wore the same clothes for 40 years while they were wandering in the wilderness. And their feet didn't get sore of the wandering. And, you know, you think if they're barefooted, you know how tough their feet must have been. But see, after these 8 years of being in Cana and doing these battles and taking these spoils, they had much raiment now. So, you see, provision was still made for them because they had done everything that God had asked them to do. There was no problem with having what they needed. None at all. And because they had really followed the words of Moses, and followed the words of Joshua. And it says, divide the spoils of your enemies with your brother. So they were many of those that couldn't go to battle for one reason or the other. They were unfit or unable or of age. They weren't able. These that went into battle were able-bodied men of every tribe. And so Joshua is saying, divide the spoils of your enemies with your brother. That's not an unusual request, I think. And I think that's what the Lord had laid on Joshua's heart. And certainly they did, evidently. And the children of Reuben, verse 9 of Joshua 22, the children of Reuben and the children of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh returned and departed from the children of Israel out of Shiloh. Let me get the page turned. My fingers not working as good as they used to. Which is in the land of Canaan, to go into the country of Gilead, to the land of their possession, whereof they were possessed according to the word of the Lord by the hand of Moses. So everything was going according to the plan of God up to this point. Now, it kind of changes a little bit. When they cross the river and they go east of Jordan, and it says, when they came unto the borders of Jordan, and the borders there is bends or windings of the river. Because the river, you know, on the map it looks pretty straight, but it's not all that straight. There's little bends and crooks in it where the water has flowed down through the ages. It says, when they came to the borders of Jordan that are in the land of Cana, the children of Reuben and the children of Gad and the half tribe of Manasseh built there an altar by Jordan, a great altar to see to. Okay. So they built an altar without instructions of God. But now, men down through the ages have had God's instructions on how to erect an altar and what he allows or don't allow. And so these people knew how to build an altar according to God's plan, but the only thing wrong with this, God hadn't told them to do it. Okay. And it says they built an altar to see to, or to look at, or have as an appearance. So they built an altar there so they could have the appearance of a place of worship. Now, in Shiloh, where they had the tabernacle, they had the real thing. It was, you know, it was there. They carried it with them wherever they went. But these guys were going back across the river, and so they didn't have anything. They didn't have anything to show. So in their mind, they thought it'd be a grand thing to do this. But everybody wasn't on the same page. So let's look at that. Verse 11, and it said, and the children of Israel heard say, Behold, the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh hath built an altar over against the land of Canaan in the borders of Jordan at the passage of the children of Israel. Well, here's another thing. They built it where, you know, when the children of Israel got down to where they were going to cross Jordan, you know, God held the waters back and they crossed it on dry land. Just like they crossed the Red Sea on dry land. And they went in to the land of Canaan dry. Well, guess where the altar was? It was where they had stepped down where the water had been on that dry land, and here's an altar over on that side now. So, gee, got a problem. And so I think it was, we need to look at where it says behold. To behold there is to call special attention toward. And then another word in that verse was where it says over against the land of Canaan. Or actually, they were looking at it as in front of our crossing, as or maybe for opposition to. And that's the way they looked at it. They looked at it, well, you know, they might be saying that's in opposition to what we did when God held the waters back and allowed us to cross. That's not right. So we get down to verse 12. And when the children of Israel heard of it, and the whole congregation of the children of Israel gathered themselves together at Shiloh to go up to war against them. So they left Shiloh under arms to go there and to do battle with the 2.5 tribes of Israel. So you got tribe against tribe. You got brother, you know, family against family here. And they were going to go get this thing straightened out. And they had been in war for 8 years, so, you know, they figured war was about the only way to do that. And they felt like God was on their side because they had the true altar. And these guys up here built a bunch of stones up there that God didn't tell them to do. Well, gee, they ready to do battle. 13. And the children of Israel sent to the children of Reuben and the children of Gad to the half tribe of Manasseh and to the land of Gilead. They sent Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest. So the priest's son, Phinehas, this is not the first time that he had been put forth to do the bidding of God, as his father was doing the bidding of God, and as at one time it would probably come his chance to do the full bidding of God and to wear the coat. So this is who they picked out. They picked out Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, and with him 10 princes of each chief house, a prince throughout all the tribes of Israel. And each one was the head of a house of their fathers among the thousands of Israel. So it wasn't just anybody they picked to go. So there's 11 of them going to go and talk to these guys and see what in the world is going on. And so they represented, they was a representation here of basically of all of Israel. Okay, 14. Or 15, I'm sorry. Done read 14. 15. And they came unto the children of Reuben, and unto the children of Gad, and to the half tribe of Manasseh, in the land of Gilead, and they spoke with them, saying. So this is what they brought to them. This was the charge. There was a trespass that was made here. So there was a trespass that was, they felt that was being perpetrated here. And so they pointed it out in 15 and 16. Let's read that again. And they came to the children of Reuben, children of Gad, to the half tribe of Manasseh, and to the land of Gilead, and they spake with them, saying, thus saying the whole congregation of the Lord, what trespass is this that ye have committed against the God of Israel, to turn away this day from following the Lord, in that ye have builded you an altar, that ye might rebel this day against the Lord? So this was the charge that Phinehas and the ten princes brought before Gad and Reuben and Manasseh and said, look, why are you doing this against the will of God? Why are you doing this to go against his will and doing it in what they considered a holy place, I'm sure, where they had crossed the Jordan. And look at verse 17. Is the iniquity of Peor too little for us, from which we are not cleansed until this day? Evidently, there was still problems with that situation there. You know what it was? Although there was a plague in the congregation of the Lord. Well, what is this iniquity, this sin or perverseness that he's talking about here in 17, where he talks about the iniquity of Peor? Well, maybe we need to address that for just a minute. Go with me once again, and I hate to keep doing it, but this is the way we're going to get understanding. And go with me to Numbers. Go with me to Numbers chapter 25. Numbers 25. Let me see if I can find it. I'm close. Boy, my old fingers are just... Ronnie was saying something about I'd built a fire. Yep, built a fire. Got to keep these old fingers nimble. Numbers 25, page 218. That's where 25 is. Now, let me see what I wanted to read. Oh, verses 1 through 9. 25, 1 through 9. Okay. Everybody with me? And Israel abode in Shittim, and the people began to commit whoredom with the daughters of Moab. And they called the people unto the sacrifice of their gods, and the people did eat and bow down to their gods, and Israel joined himself unto Baal Peor. There you are. And this was exactly what God didn't want them to do, or did, and he told them not to do. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. I'll bet. Because he had already told them, now, when you go in to possess your land, don't do these things. But yet, these are hard-headed folks. It says in verse 4, and the Lord said unto Moses, take all the heads of the people and hang them up before the Lord against the sun, that the fierce anger of the Lord may be turned away from Israel. And Moses said unto the judges of Israel, slay ye every one of his men that were joined unto Baal Peor. And behold, one of the children of Israel came and brought unto his brother a Midianitish woman in the sight of Moses and in the sight of all the congregation of the children of Israel, who were weeping before the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. Okay, verse 7 gives you a little light on the thing. Here we find Phinehas again. Phinehas was involved in this thing. And when Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, saw it, he rose up from among the congregation, and he took a javelin in his hand, and he went after the man of Israel into the tent, and he thrust both of them through, the man of Israel and the woman through the belly. So the plague were stayed from the children of Israel. So only your mind needs to tell you what was going on here. It says in verse 9, and those that died in the plague were 20,400. And according to what we read in Joshua 22 over here, and Phinehas is saying in verse 17, is the iniquity of Peor too little for us? Was that not enough? 24,000? Gee, from which we're not cleansed until this day, although there was a plague in the congregation of the Lord. Well, let's read on. Let's look at verse 18. But that you must turn away this day from following the Lord. And it will be seeing ye rebel today against the Lord, that tomorrow he will be wroth with the whole congregation of Israel. He said, notwithstanding, if the land of your possessions be unclean, then pass ye over into the land of the possession of the Lord, wherein the Lord's tabernacle dwelleth, and take possession among us. This is what he's telling the 2.5 tribes. He says, you know, if what you possess, if you feel like it's unclean, you can come back across the river and join us. But rebel not against the Lord, nor rebel against us in building you an altar beside the altar of the Lord our God. In 19 there. So, when he's talking about coming back to the tabernacle, of course, was the habitation of God. And so, you know, this altar that you guys have built is a false altar. It's not to have anything to do with the altar that belongs to the tabernacle. And then there was a question put forth. It said, did not Achan, the son of Zerah, commit a trespass in the accursed thing, and wrath fell on all the congregation of Israel, and that man perished not alone, and that man perished not alone in his iniquity. So you see that there has others that have been caught doing the wrong, and so they didn't perish alone in their iniquity or in their perverseness or sin that is against God. Which is 21 through 29 is gives you an explanation of why these people, these 2.5 tribes, did this. And so we got about time to read that, and that'll probably carry us to the end of our study tonight. And we'll pick up with Judges 2 next time. So 21 says this: Then the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh answered. So they was, this, all this was being brought out to show them that, well, when God's wrath is kindled against Israel, a lot of people can suffer the consequences. And, you know, we don't want to suffer because you guys went out here and built you an altar that God didn't tell you to build. This is their answer. And said unto the heads of the thousands of Israel, The Lord God of gods, He knoweth, and Israel, He shall know it, if it be in rebellion, or if it be in transgression against the Lord. And here's a parenthesis, said, and save us not this day. You know, if that be the case, save us not. That we have built us an altar to turn from following the Lord, or if to offer their own burnt offerings or meat offerings, or if to offer peace offerings their own, let the Lord Himself recline their idea, you know, to make these offerings and place them, the burnt offerings or the meat offerings or anything like that, upon this altar. And he says, let the Lord Himself, if He requires it, you know, then we could understand that it would be okay. And he says, and if we have not rather done it for fear of this thing, say. And this is what their thoughts were. Now think about this. In time to come, your children might speak unto our children. You know, because there's going to be crossing back and forth across the Jordan. So they were thinking in terms of the future. And it said, in time to come, your children might speak unto our children, saying, What have ye to do with the Lord God of Israel? For the Lord hath made Jordan a border between us, and you, ye children of Reuben, and ye children of Gad, ye have no part in the Lord. So shall your children make our children cease from fearing the Lord. Now they're saying, well, we don't want you saying that we're not serving God, and that our children might turn your children away from serving God, because it seems like it's a pretty easy thing to take place or to do. So therefore we say, verse 26, let us now prepare to build us an altar, not for burnt offerings, not for sacrifice, but that it may be a witness between us. And you and our generations after us, that we might do the service of the Lord before Him with our burnt offerings and with our sacrifices and with our peace offerings, that your children may not say to our children in time to come that you have no part in the Lord. And certainly they didn't want that to happen with their children. That seems reasonable. Therefore, said we, that it shall be when they should so say to us or to our generation in times to come, that we may say again, behold, the pattern of the altar of the Lord, which the fathers made, not for burnt offerings, not for sacrifice, but it is a witness between us and you. So they said they'd done it by the way of a pattern. So they knew how to build an altar according to God's pattern. God had, God had laid out a pattern. And the construction was done according to a pattern. And what we would say, and they followed the blueprint. But it was for a witness, not for sacrifice. It's because we could look back and forth, you could see and we could see, and we realize and know that we serve the same God. Okay. Verse 29, God forbid that we should rebel against the Lord and turn this day from following the Lord. To build an altar for burnt offerings, for meat offerings, for sacrifice, beside the altar of the Lord our God, that is before his tabernacle. So they said, no, we didn't do it. We didn't do it to be in competition with that tabernacle altar. We didn't do it for that at all. We did it so you wouldn't say that our children had forgot God and that our children couldn't say to your children, that we have forgot God either. And when finished, the priests, the prince of the congregations, and the heads of the thousands of Israel, verse 30, which were with him, heard the words that the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, and the children of Manasseh spake, it pleased them. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest, said unto the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, and to the children of Manasseh, this day we perceive that the Lord is among us, because ye have not committed this trespass against the Lord. Now ye have delivered the children of Israel out of the hands of the Lord, because there's no trespass here. There's no sin that have to be taken care of them. And it says in 32, and Phinehas the son of Eleazar, the priest and the princes returned from the children of Reuben and from the children of Gad, out of the land of Gilead into the land of Canaan, and to the children of Israel, and brought them word again, or told them what had happened and how it happened and what went on. And the thing pleased the children of Israel, and the children of Israel blessed God and did not intend to go up against them in battle to destroy the land wherein the children of Reuben and Gad dwelt. If they were going to go over there, they were going to go over there and destroy the people. They weren't going to destroy the land. And the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, called the altar Ed, E-D. For it shall be a witness between us that the Lord is God. And so that concludes Joshua 22. And Joshua 23, if you want to go on and study, because there's not much left in the book of Joshua, I believe a couple of chapters is all. But Joshua is going to die. He's going to die and be buried in the land there that God had given him for his work with the children of Israel. And so covers the 34 verses in chapter 22. We went back and looked at some of the other verses in some of the other places, and we realized that God has dealt with things as they come up, and these people are remembering them as a lesson. And that is a good thing, that we have this Word of God that we can go to and use it as a learning tool and as a lesson to each of us, whether it be 3,000 years ago or whether it be 3 days ago. These things written in the Word of God are put there for our understanding. And we may not like what we read, or we may not like what we hear, but this is God's plan, and this is the good way that God deals with His folks. But now we live in the age of grace, and thank God for that, because the more I look at these things, and the further we go with this study, the more we realize that when you get into Judges, there's six places, you know, where he set up judges, and they went out and rescued, if you want to call it rescued, saved the children of Israel from the awful things that they did before the sight of God. And when the judges were gone or something took place, they went back. It seemed like it got worse rather than getting better. And sometimes it seems like that's the way man is. You know, when he leaves God out of the picture, and he chooses to do that. And it's his choice, because God had given him free will. And he can choose. He could choose to hold up his fist and curse at God in this day and age. But the fact is, you know, somewhere, somehow, some way down the road, is the time that everything equals up on the books. You know, if you're a bookkeeper, you got to balance those books. Well, God says in places things written in the books. I don't know what they are, but I'm not the bookkeeper. He is. So remember this. And, you know, when things come along in our life and we deal with them, and we're dealing with a grandson situation in our family now. And one of our grandsons has chosen not to follow up on what he's been taught. And he's paying the monetary consequences now, and I don't know if that's going to help or hurt. But I look at some of these examples here, and I see that it gets worse. And I pray to God every day that it doesn't get worse on his part or with him, and that he learns his lesson and gets back in the walk or the manner of life before God that he needs to, because he is, I don't know what he's looking for, but whatever it is he's looking for, it's like the old country music song says, it's in all the wrong places. We'll just leave it at that. And ask that you pray for that situation. That is this prayer of ours tonight. So thank you. Thank you for being with us, for what we've seen. And I'll unlock the mic and turn it back over to Ronnie, because he didn't have to go on his little tour through the computer with his Chinese friends. So let me unlock his thing.